So the topic that I wanted to discuss is something that, you know, when I started looking at the Shelos HaTshuvos, Divrei Michal, or Michal Siv, the WhatsApp questions that we've been asking, so I get a lot of enjoyment at your questions. But there is a pattern, which I think is important, especially if you're on the college campus, to look at and understand the different akum isurim we have. So hopefully we'll get a chance to discuss today pas akum, stam yenam, and bishul akum, chalav yisrael, chalav akum, and all those things. Before I begin, I want to take away a myth that one might have. First of all, I wanted to dedicate the shir for Refuah Shlema, for Tzvi ben Pesha. My father-in-law is having surgery in the next few hours with any surgery. So we know that it says, we say every morning, it's a good vort, we say every morning, I think Rapinkis is the one who says this. It says, Refa'inu Hashem v'nirafeh. So if you notice that many of the parshios, many of the, brachas of Shmon Esrei, so they don't start with Hashem, Refa'inu Hashem, right? So Lachlanu, Hashiva Shafte'era, whatever, Shafte'en Gurishona, Al Tzadikim, V'al Chazim. So why is it Refa'inu Hashem? Because the first thing you have to know when it comes to Refuah is Hashem, right? Kelna Refa'nana, it says Hashem. Ani Hashem Rufecha means Hashem is the ultimate doctor, and he sends people to guard against and to protect the so-called doctors. So anytime there's a surgery, you know it comes directly from the Ribbono Shalom. So the Ribbono Shalom should give my father-in-law a Rufa'inu Hashem and should have a complete recovery. So I wanted to dispel a myth that comes up, and this comes up, I'm sure, on the college campus as well. You know, if you know a little bit, if you're a Gentile and you know a little bit, you say, wait a minute, there seems to be, you know, you people are the chosen people. Does chosen mean that you don't like us, that you're more important than we are? And one of the examples that I started off by explaining is that, of course, it's not patently not true. For example, when it comes to Azvios HaGoy, when it comes to an Aveda of a Goy, Avedat HaGoy, so a Goy has a lost item. Now, of course, we're not discussing here the law of the land is the law. I'm not 100% sure. I apologize. I don't know what the law of the land is in the countries that you live in. If you find a wallet on the floor, is the law of the land that you have to return it?
No.
Right, so that's what people told me. It's hard for me to believe that if you find someone's wallet, you don't have to go to the police station or anything like that. But that apparently is true. So let's say that's not the law. So the law of the land is you don't have to return it. And the Pasuk says in Devarim, Avedas Achika. The Gemara tells, the Rambam says this, but the Gemara says that what do we learn from Aveda Zachicha? So here the Rambam in Hilchot Gezeilu V'Aveda, Perek Yud Aleph Halacha Gimel, says what? Achicha is what? Your brother. What does your brother always refer to? Another, a fellow Jew. Hamachzira Harezeh over Aveda. A person shouldn't, he's over Aveda. What are you returning it for? You don't have to return it to a non-Jew. Now, what we have to understand, don't worry, we'll finish the Rambam, is there was something a little bit different. My son has a test on Pashas Va'etchanan. So at the end, we know that there's lo sechanin, that we're not allowed to show kanina bakarka, we're not allowed to sell land to non-Jews in Eretz Yisrael. This became a very hot topic when a certain chief rabbi of a certain town came out publicly and said, land is not allowed to be sold to the Arabs. You can't sell it in his town. And it's something I guess you don't say publicly. You don't put that on Yahu Torah, as we're doing now. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's kind of missing the idea, the concept, and this actually applies by the holidays, I'm sure. All your parents probably gave a presents to the mailman, and to the newspaper guy, and to the haircut, whatever it is. So why is that allowed? Because that's normal way of doing business. When somebody's Ovid Avodah Zarah, and they so to show them chain, to recognize it is a problem. And it's clear, or also in Parshas Va'etchanan, is about not showing too much love, what I call idol worship, to superstars, whatever it might be. So my son said, what do you mean? So I said, I'll give you an example. How about all those posters that kids have, not him of course, kids have in their rooms? Of all these wonderful superstar, whatever, I'm not going to use any names, some of whom have served time in jail, some of whom should be serving time in jail. So that's the pictures that we have. That might violate the sister also. What are you showing chayim to them? There seems to be no reason. So If that is not so, then if they're a regular Gentile, so then there seems to be nothing wrong. Ready for this? V'im hechzira lakadesh Hashem is by returning it, he's going to perform a kiddush Hashem. Kidei sheyufaru et Yisrael v'yadua shehem bali amuna harei ze meshubach. Says the Rambam that if a person is going to be returning something and he can create a kiddush Hashem through that, ma tovu manayim, of course he should do that. Right? If he's doing it because he's scared of the guy and he says, oh, I better do this, but he's doing it for the beautiful reason of get a kiddush Hashem, harei ze meshubach, that's what you should do. U'b'makom sheyesh chilul Hashem, aveda asura v'chayv lachzira. And if there's going to be a chilul Hashem, because everybody knows that you put up the signs that Nebuch, Fluffy the kitten, is missing, and you're telling everybody you have Fluffy the kitten in your house, and even though the law of the land says that you don't have to return Fluffy the kitten without, and you say, no, I'm doing the right thing, and I'm returning Fluffy the kitten, because it's going to be a chilul Hashem, of course you have to return it. U'b'makom, because b'mishum darchei shalom, it's also the right thing to do, because we want to promote goodwill towards man. So this is obviously one example that we're not the chosen people and say, oh, it only applies to us. Yes, if you read the technical rule, you'll see that in fact there is achicha, aveidas achicha, and really according to the technical rule, you only have to return stuff to Jews. But then we see, says the Rambam, of course it's a kiddush Hashem. So there's not special treatment, one would say. Except, I'm not sure you make a bracha on something you stole. But okay, so it was in there, I figured it's for guests. So I'm a guest in the yeshiva now, yeah? So that's all fine and dandy until it comes to the laws of ribbis. So I remember, it's only 2 years ago already, when I'm giving my business shurim, there was a certain student, he's not here now, and he fought me on this. And it really bothered him when we discussed the laws of ribbis, which is obviously very difficult laws of taking interest. Why we have special rules for Jews and not special rules for non-Jews. It was quite well known in many, it was well written by Shakespeare that the Jews were well known for lending people money. Davar Torah mutar lahalvot la'ovod kochavim, source number 2, Tor Yoredea, Simon Kufnun Tet, beribis, betama deribis, ksiv, chaya chichayimach, vod kochavim, lohim. It's not the goyim or not a chicha when it comes to this. Oh, so now you've really got it. I found our way to get around Hashem was avayed and other things. How are you going to go answer the laws of ribbis? Why is it that when it comes to a guy, I can lend him at 7.5% and a Jew, forget about it. Not only can I not lend him, I can't even have any sort of payback. I can't invite him for lunch afterwards if I wouldn't normally do that. I can't give him Yankee tickets. There's a whole law. There's a whole beautiful book by Rabbi Reisman called The Laws of Ribbis. It's a great book if you want to get the laws. It's a beautiful book. It's a funny story. You won't find it funny. But he was in the hospital. He had some surgery or something. And he had his book there. I don't know what he was reviewing it. And one of the nurses, after a few days, said, Rabbi, can I ask you a question? She goes, yes. She goes, you people are amazing, you Jews. She goes, you got laws for everything. She goes, what do you mean? She goes, I see the book that you have there, the laws of the rabbis. She goes, you got your own rules? The word is ribbis. Forget it. She goes, yeah, we have our own rules. Okay, just go ahead. Right. So how do we answer this question? Anybody have an idea? How do you answer ribbis? How do we say it? Doesn't it show we're the chosen? Oh, we're different. So good. I'm happy you don't have an answer. I tried with this kid. I didn't have a good answer for him. And then I said, well, who can I ask that would help me out? I think it was pretty obvious. I went to Ramachos. Sir Ramachos, you love all people. What do you say? And he gave me a great vort. And this is the vort that we should live by. Again, this is the introduction to the laws that we will do. Comes along Rav Machlis, and he says the following thing. Right? Now, all what I'm saying now is not what Rav Machlis said, but I'm plugging it in because Rav Machlis would never speak the way I'm about to speak. Okay? Your dad calls you and your dad says, psh, listen, I would never do this normally, but I found that you became a CEO of a fancy company now. And you have a lot of money. And this is just an example, of course. And so I need some money. Mom doesn't know, but I've been, spending a little money on the ponies. I'm going to the horse races. And can you lend me $10,000? Dad, of course, it's such an honor to pay you back finally for all the time. I'm happy to do it. And you know what, Dad? Forget about it. The banks now are charging 7.5% interest. just give me 2%. Your dad's like, whoa, okay, sure, that makes sense. He goes, you know what, Dad, I see you're not so happy, 1.5%. Would anybody in their right mind do something like that? Never. Your brother calls you. Your brother says, psh, I heard you became a hotshot. CEO of a company, still teaching yeshiva. Wow, you're amazing. This is an example, just an example. I don't have a brother. Two, I always wanted a brother, but I don't have one. So, what do you say? So he says, can you lend me money, $10,000? You're like, you're my brother, I love you. You're like a brother to me. You know, I just lend Dad money at 2%. You're my brother, though. 3.5%. I'm giving you a toiva. You're going to go into a bank, 7.5%. You guys would never do that. Nobody would do that, I hope. Why? Because Achicha is my brother. Says Ramachlos, that's the way you're supposed to look at every Jew. Jew is your brother. The reason why is it's an incredible thing. I hope you've recognized this through your life. Here in Eretz Yisrael, you see this especially, right? Especially that word that's used all the time. Achi, achi. You could be in the biggest fight. You could diffuse a fight like this if you say the word achi. Achi. And the guy's like, whoa. And it diffuses people because you're like, hey, brother. And I'm like, oh, why? I forgot. You're my brother. Right? I forgot that. Right? And I've had this experience multiple times in my life where everything is like, what do you think? I'm going to do something bad to you, right, brother? There's a certain rabbi who travels to yeshiva every day out in the Tel Aviv area. So every morning, he, as he gets onto 38, he pulls over to say Tfilas HaDerech. He feels a nice chumrah. He feels it's not appropriate to do it while you're driving, so he wants to be in Yeshiva Sadat. He said almost every morning, somebody pulls behind him to ask if he needs help. Did he have a flat tire? Did something happen? That's an Eretz Yisrael experience. If that happens in America, you're in trouble. Right, you're driving, oh, I'll drive with the flat tire, I'm scared. I once had that, actually. I was giving a shir once. It's very scary. I was giving a shir once, and somebody graciously agreed to pick me up and to go to the shir, and they were driving me to the shir, and as we're driving on the New Jersey Turnpike, the tire blows. And it was very, very, that in itself is scary. Baruch Hashem, we were in the left lane, we were able to get all the way to the right lane. And he clearly was not somebody adept to putting a tire on. I, you know, was certainly going to play like I was because it was going to be a good story for my shir. And I was like, I guess I could do the tire. He's like, I don't know how to do it. I'm like, okay, I guess we'll figure it out. So, of course, he called AAA. And they're like, oh, no problem, we'll come, we'll fix the tire for you, we'll be there, you know, 3 to 6 hours. Like, or tomorrow morning, we're not sure. And then all of a sudden, a white van pulls up behind us. I'm like, hey, Rahman, what's the line? And the was, we're two guys, you know, like, we're like, oh, we're not scared at all. Anyway, and who comes out of the van? Asat Merchasit. Yeah. He's got the whole thing. He goes, no, I saw you on the side of the road, you need some help. I'm from, you know, Chaverim or Yedidim, whatever it's called. I can help you with time. We're like, well, I mean, we're going to do it ourselves, but I mean, if you want to help us, we can watch you, you know. That's achicha. And that's the idea of Rebbe Sachas Hashem that we say, he's not my brother. It's different. It's a different case. That's the way we have to look at Jews. And that's why, clearly, right, and as you get into the parsha of Shaduchim, or maybe you're already in the parsha of Shaduchim, you'll understand that a lot of these rules make a lot of sense. Especially when you're on the secular college campus, you now understand more than you've ever understood these laws of why we need to have gedarim, of why we need to have fences so that we don't get too close for comfort with the Gentile nations. And there's many laws around this, and I'm going to try briefly to just go a little bit, obviously I'll be happy to answer questions, into a lot of these different rules. So the Rambam here writes in source number 3, Ketzad, Lo yishte adam v'mesiva shalacham. This is a unique law that the Rambam quotes that is not well codified in halacha. But the Rambam does in fact write this in Hilchas Malachas Asura's Perek Yud Zayin. And that is that a person should not be drinking at a mesiba of an akum. A party. So I gave a shir a few weeks ago on holiday parties. Unfortunately, Yahi Torah picked it up as a featured shir. So I don't want, you know, people, God forbid, if they're listening to me, you know, oh, we heard that you're already rabbi. But, in short, the guy's going to think, Nabuch, like the Suda Purim, that I'm going to go to the frat party, and I'm going to bring my own Manischewitz. And everything's fine. It's Mahadrim and a Mahadrim. Like the Suda Purim, right? Sorry, in the story, I'm sorry. Like the Suda that was in the story of the Megillah. That's not appropriate. Right? It's Mahadrim and a Mahadrim, but the most not Mahadrim and a Mahadrim part. You can't do that. But lo yishtev im rov misiv yisrael mutter. So he gives a heter, and he says, you know, if your frat party is, you know, alpha beta Jew, so in the, but the idea is, right, and we have a law, of course, and this is, of course, that I start with, and that's stam yinam, that wine has to be mevushal in order to be able to drink it together with a non-Jew. However, according to the Rambam, it might be aser b'chozos. The Rambam's definition of mesivas shogayim is not just a party, it's probably also a bar. I know this is a very difficult law. As a business person, I could tell you that I have great difficulty with this when you're closing a deal. So a lot of times deals are closed, not in the boardroom, but in the bar. So what do you do? So it could be other Mefarshim speak about it once in a while when we talk about the Isser of Sheikh Akum, of beer, and things of that nature. It was only with somebody who's Kovei Atzmo. So that might be a heter, but in general, we should know that we try to stay far away from these type of things, or parties and things of that nature. It's obviously going to lead to bad things. And this applies also to wine. So we know that wine has to be mevushal. There is a shaila in halacha, what is considered to be mevushal. Those of us that are sitting here besides myself, I guess, who live outside of Israel, are generally somech on Rav Moshe Feinstein's heter. Rav Moshe Feinstein had a heter that pasteurization, I believe, at 90 degrees would be mutter here in Eretz Yisrael. They kind of laugh at that, especially because of the Beis Yosef's shita. Rav Avadia Yosef was very machmir like this, that you need actual high level of boiling. So you'll see, when you should be doing this, if you ever look in the back of a bottle of wine, besides the 8 hashkachas, you'll see. So if it's mevushal, it's mevushal. If it's here in Eretz Yisrael, it's mevushal. You know it's really been. Sometimes they'll actually say mevushal through pasteurization. Sometimes they'll actually only write it in English because they're probably shipping it to the United States. And in Eretz Yisrael, they won't be so much on that. Sometimes in Eretz Yisrael, I would say the majority of wines are actually not mevushal. Now they might actually be mevushal. You'll never know this, but they don't not so much on it. This is a major problem. This comes up at all different types of events when goyim are there. Further, and this is the difficult, very difficult part, we compare, the Gemara compares someone who is Mechal Shabbos with Arhesia to a goy. And this law seemingly would apply as well to a Jew who is not religious. And that would mean you would need Yayim Mevushal at your Seder when you have Uncle Harry coming, who's clearly not Shomer Shabbos. Now, I'll tell you two things. Number one, how do we define somebody who's Mechal Shabbos? Right? This is, I mean, how do you define someone who's not from? Is it Mechal Shabbos Befar Hesya? I think there was an idea, I don't remember if it was in the name of Rosh Hashanah Zalman Auerbach, but one of the Gedolim who said to define Befar Hesya, it's that you would go in front of your parents and light up a cigarette on Shabbos. Most people are nervous. Somebody asked me after one of the shirim I gave on this, so he said to me, I have a family member, unfortunately, who is not religious, a very close family member. So I asked him, I said, would he do this? He said, no. He comes to the Shabbos table, he would never be on his phone at this. I don't think that's the definition. It's not Befar Hesya. He has some embarrassment. Furthermore, there are poskim who say that maybe this law doesn't apply with all the laws of Tinok Shenishba and all the things that Chazon Ish made very famous, and nowadays, especially in America, they don't even know what they're doing is wrong. They're both Ovid Avodah Zarah. Again, what's the reason for stop? What's the reason? So the reason is Mishum Chasnas, right? If that's the reason, then why do we care? You can marry, it's fine and dandy to marry another Jew. So, okay, our parents aren't religious. I don't understand. What's the difference here? You can't marry the girl? So Chas V'Shalom, that's not the reason. It's not Mishum Chas. It's also because of Hakrobas Karbanos. They, in their services, and certainly even in Christianity, they do use wine, but certainly in real Avodah Zarah, Mamish Avodah Zarah called Kol Deos, they use wine. There's a story told, I don't know how true it is, about a guy who went, you know, I heard the story from someone, you know, one of those stories. I swear the story is true. I heard the story from my friend. It happened to my friend's father's brother's sister, you know, his dog. And it was at a, you know, like a place like La Marais or whatever, and they're eating, and they bring the wine out, and he's a nice business religious guy in Baruch Hashem, was able to get all these non-Jewish people to come with him to La Marais, and they're eating there. I actually went to La Marais once in a business meeting, and the non-Jew says to me, he goes, listen, I don't care, but there's no way this place is kosher. I go, excuse me? I said, how do you know? He's like, first of all, the food is way too good. So I'm like, what do you mean? He says he thought that kosher food was all about like matzo balls and flunkin and stuff like that. And he said there's no tuda here. Doesn't say it's, where does it say it's kosher? So I said, oh, I'll show you. And I looked around. I couldn't find it anywhere. There's a sign, actually. I don't know what it is now. It was an okay, there was an okay sign. I go, look, it says okay. It's like, okay. Like, well, what does that mean, okay? The guy really, he mom thought I was sure, okay. Anyway, so the guy's at La Marais. He's right. It's very good food. Okay. And he's at La Marais. And they bring the wine out. They, you know, these people, they order a really fancy bottle of wine. And he doesn't know why. He decides to just look at it quickly. And he looks at it. And he says, I can't believe this. I made a mistake. It's not Mavushal wine. They made a mistake. Usually this is not the case. This is why they have one of the reasons they have the Mashkiach. He comes out and he opens it. I don't know what happened. And they start serving and he won't drink it. And they're like, why? He goes, no, I'm sorry. I'm dry. Whatever excuse you made. And afterwards, the whole thing's all over. Everybody leaves. The waiter comes up to him and he says, can I ask you a question? I noticed you didn't drink the wine. What was the reason? So you gotta tell a guy what. He says, I didn't want it. He goes, no, really? Was there a reason? He goes, actually, you are a waiter here. You should know this. The wine has to have a special marking on it. Mavusha. He goes, why? He gets into a whole pill of why. And he says, can I tell you something? But, you know, promise me I'm not gonna get fired. He's like, no, tell me what. He said, I actually believe in voodoo, whatever, some real Avodah Zarah. And this was the first time ever I was able to open up a bottle of wine that was $400. And I realized that this was a great opportunity for me to siphon off just a little bit and give it to my Avodah Zarah. So before I came out, I poured just a little bit and I gave it to my God. So we see that Avodah Zarah is fine and well in America.
Crazy.
So the question is that, is there a way to get around this? So Mavushal obviously is the way to get around this. Even with Mavushal Rhinos, as you just learned by Masivah Shalgayim, I don't think it's the appropriate thing. To be Koveya, a person wants to close a business deal, he's in a bar, I don't think that that's so bad. But it's something to really be careful about. As well as parties, as well as Mayim Mavushal. Again, other heterim today that some rabbis have, even if the person's not from, you have to ask your local Orthodox rabbi, you can put it on the group, see what Rav Siv has to say, although I don't think he'll have a positive answer. But I know some great poskim who are matir having. And again, it depends what the situation is. It's very hard here in Eretz Yisrael, I would argue. They're not. A lot of people are not machal shabbos for hesia, meaning they're a lot of times they're embarrassed about it. So I'm not so sure. Again, I know the majority of poskim disagree and say Yayin Mavushal applies even to someone who's not from, but it's something worth looking into. And generally, we're soymich on Rav Moshe's heter. And we can go through pasteurization. I actually, a number of years ago, went on something called the Yom Kef. It was I'll probably tell you a few stories of that Yom Kef as we continue, because it had all the Isurim in it. Except we won't discuss mixed swimming. And they tried to make the day very religious, and things turned out it wasn't great. So the first place we went was actually not so far away from here, down on 38. There is a Yekev. I forget what it's called, Kadesh, something like that. If you go keep, there's a number of wineries if you go down. And what?
Where is this?
Yeah, it's like 20 minutes from here. Yeah. I'll take you guys. Yeah, you're all 21. Are you all 18? Doesn't matter. Yeah, you're not in yeshiva anymore. It's fine. I don't work here anymore. I can't get in trouble. So fine. So it was a really, really power. It was really amazing. I remember it very well because I remember not thinking I was going to go on a fun day with my company and learn so much Torah. And the guy there was talking, and he was quoting Pesukim in the Torah. It was beautiful. He wasn't religious. I mean, he wasn't wearing a yarmulke. I don't know. Probably was more religious than I am, but okay. And then he says, why is the wine in this region so much better than the wines everywhere else? And everybody's like looking at him, and he points to me. He goes, no! Points to my yarmulke. He says, you should know it's a Pesuk in the Torah. I'm like, I know. I don't really want to show off. You say the Pesuk, you know? I have no idea what he's talking about. From a few weeks ago, the bracha of Shevet Yehuda. Right, the wine Mishika Seyu. The wine is like maybe they would say better the lavan of the teeth than the wine. Yehuda was blessed with wine. And we're in the region of Yehuda, right? There's regions, Baruch Hashem and Eretz Yisrael, they keep to this, that each region, the Shevet Dan, Shevet Binyamin, Shevet, right? So Shevet Yehuda is where we are right now. We're in Shevet Yehuda. It's called Mata Yehuda. It's the province of Yehuda. There are different people who don't live in a town like Beit Shemesh. So if you live outside a town in a yeshuv, so you're part of this municipality that's called. That was the reason. Anyway, Tachlis, he gave us a lot of wines to try. Everybody was trying them. None of the wines were mavushal. So it was very sad. I happened not to like wine anyway, so it didn't matter so much. But it was a little bit embarrassing. Everybody was drinking wine and I couldn't. So I spoke to him about it. Well, nobody gets offended by these things. And I said, no. So he says to me, you know, it's such a hard thing because in my winery, we want to make everybody happy. And, you know, he was telling me, I'm really religious, and it's really not a problem, but whatever, okay. And he said that he's in contact with the Herzog brothers. I don't know who that is, Baron Herzog, you know. And he tells me that in California, where they make Baron Herzog, they're not allowed to write on it a California wine, even though it's made in California, because it's mavushal. It's considered to be inferior. And I said to him, can I ask you a question? You're a professional wine guy. If I were to give you a blind taste test, would you be able to notice the differences? The whole question of mavushal, that it's inferior. He says, are you kidding me? 100%. I go, even if it's just pasteurized? He goes, yes, for sure. No question. He was like, he thought I was crazy. And I'm like, I know. I have no idea what he's talking about. But yeah, apparently. So he said that they're trying really hard to figure out some way to do this called flash pasteurization, where it would even be, according to the Israeli standards, you know, over 100 degrees, and it wouldn't, I don't know what's new in that, right? Okay, so that's the first inyan. The second inyan, which I hope you're all aware about, is something called Pas Yisrael. Afal pishi osir pashal akam bimekomo. I quoted here the Rambam Melachos Asuras Yud Zayin. Even though yesh mekilim, even though really the same issur that we have with wine of should be the same thing as we'll get to bishal akam with bread. You should not be eating bread that a non-Jew baked for you. However, people are mekel, so let's understand what we're talking about here. So let's just start with the easiest, and that's the Ashkenazim. The Ashkenazim say that in order not to lead to chasnus, it can't be that the non-Jew made the item from beginning until end without any Jew's involvement. Because then you're going to taste it, and you're going to say, wow, this is very good, and it might lead to overly talking about it, and then, you know, the usual, can I marry your daughter? So comes along the Rambam and says, well, there's a heter to this because when it comes to bread, a person can't live without bread. And in many towns, there was no choice. The bakeries were owned. I once went to a bakery. I went on a business trip once in Switzerland. We were in Zurich. And it was a very difficult business trip because my business trips always revolved around what are we going to eat. And Baruch Hashem was working for a nice firm company, and they were able to get us a one meal a day, kosher meal. It was actually very difficult, because at that time, it might be still with the law, shechita was usher in Switzerland. So in order to get meat, they had to go to France, Nebuch, but I mean not Nebuch, they were making a lot of money. This family from France was making us the food. And they were going to France every day. She went with all of her kids, because each person's allowed to bring in like 3 kilo of meat. So they would never, she would go and bus in her kids. France was like an hour away. And they would go and they would get meat, they would come in, they'd make us these meals. But we only had one meal a day. So we were pretty hungry. You know, one meal a day for me is like impossible. So in the mornings, we davened in a Chabad house. Baruch Hashem. It was one of these shows that they did, one of the trade shows that they had like once every 4 years. So it was like totally packed. And of course, my company decides a month before, oh, we should go to the show. There was no hotels available. The closest hotel was that hour away hotel in France. And I said to my friend, I said, we're not going to daven the whole week without a minyan. We got to be able. So I called the Chabad house. There was a Chabad house. I said, you know, Chabad, can you find me a place to go? Oh, yeah, there's a hostel down the street. Nobody knows about it. You call them. I called them. Of course, they had. I didn't realize what kind of hostel this was. The bathrooms were on each floor. Right? Okay, it was really bad situation. I had to sleep. We had like 4 guys in a room. It was really bad. I felt like I was in camp again. And then the one night, and it was Switzerland, like it. And then one night at 3 a.m, they started banging on our doors, and it turned out to be 2 drunk guys who thought it was their room. And we were just like, oh, the Nazis are here. We're done. Because when we would come in every day, they were like, hello, Mr. Harstein, how are you, Mr. Schachtelmann? I'm like, oh my god. So we thought they came to get us. But you can imagine the morning. Can you imagine having to going into like a communal room with all, it was crazy. In any case, we were able to. That's what we risked, to be daven, to be able to daven. So we davened in a chabad, which we found out later that the general community of Zurich put this chabad in cherem. I didn't know this. Yeah, it was funny. They put it in cherem because they opened up a chabad and they thought they were there's hasagas gvul that people were. I don't know. I don't care. Anyway, so they in the morning they had like a little lachaim, of course, and a little fabregan. And I said to them, I don't know, I'm stupid, but I said, is there any like kosher places here? They're like, you don't know? They're like, down the street, literally down the street, there's a bakery. The first run of the bakery every morning, they make for us croissants. You'll see, it's very easy. You just go in and say kosher, and they'll show you croissants. And actually, each of them have like a little sticker on it that the rabbi, whatever. I'm like, what? Hot croissants? So I go with my friend. I go with my friend, and we go there, and exactly that's what it is. And I'm like, oh, I go. I'm so excited. So like, I'm fortunately, you know, a fat guy in a bakery. I'm like, give me 10 of them. Like, I don't know what to do. I figure I'd buy for everybody from there. And she's like, oh, I'm sorry, there's a limit. You can only buy 2. I'm like, did my wife call you? No. No, it turned out that they had a limit because they only made a certain amount every morning. Anyway, so every morning that's the place that we go. It's absolutely delicious. But generally what would happen, I don't even know if they were pasta straw, but the idea was they were kosher. They had a hashgacha on them. That a lot of these places didn't have, they had one bakery in the town. They made sure the bakery was kosher, but they didn't go there at 6 o'clock in the morning. That's true. The Gemara tells us about one of the Amoraim, the Tanaim, who went and he threw just a match inside. So that that's called Pasas Yisrael, according to Ashkenazim. All you have to do is be involved in the process, light the fire, do something to be involved in the process. What's the problem? The problem is in these large plants, okay, in these large Oreo cookie places and Entenmann's Donuts, they don't have the time to make the donuts is at 6 in the morning and the rabbi's not there yet. So those things are actually not Pas Yisrael. But because what the Rambam wrote is Shasat Chak about Pas Balei Batim, that's always also. This is called Pas Palter. What's the additional heter? The additional heter is that it doesn't, you don't even know who Mr. Entenmann's is. There is no Mr. Entenmann's. Mr. Oreo Cookies, you don't know who he is. And therefore, that's more of a heter. If it's somebody's own home, there's no heter for that, right? If your friend bakes you bread in your home, you know it's 100% kosher, and he's a guy, it's 100% usher, no matter what. There's no pas hakum, that's not allowed. But if it's a plant and you're never going to meet the guy, what's chasas going to happen here? I'm going to run out to Nabisco. Who made those Oreo cookies that I ate yesterday? They were amazing. It's impossible. It's not going to happen. And that would be one of the heterim. Yeah.
In your case, like just an average kosher bakery, that's automatically Pas Yisrael, no? Because doesn't a Jew have to turn on the plate?
No.
Why not?
No.
Isn't that how it works? Or did I just make that up?
You made it up. Partly. Nowadays, when I was growing up as a kid in the five towns, things were different. If I remember correctly, I even think that the challahs, I know it sounds absolutely ridiculous, I think that in some bakeries, even the challahs weren't Pas Yisrael. Because in the mornings, who would come? The goyim would come in the morning at 6 in the morning. They would start baking challahs for Shabbos. And then the rabbi would show up at 8 o'clock in the morning. But all the challahs were made already. He didn't turn the fire on. So it wasn't all the time. Nowadays, you're right. Kimat, you don't, a regular bakery, you can't find a baker. Now, you know, one could argue that's even worse because you know the baker. But people still say that's called the factory. And that's not us. You don't know exactly which baker it makes it. But nowadays, that's not true. You're right. Most bakeries now, they insist that a Jew turns on the fire in the morning. The person who opens up has to be a Jew and turn the fire on. No issue at all. That's usually. But in factories, that's not the case. They tell a story, actually, of Rabbi Leff. I heard the story from Rabbi Leff. He said that when he was living in Florida, or Zev Leff, when he was living in Florida, he was a rabbi there. So he got a call from the OU. He used to work for the OU, that they cornered the market. Arnold's bread is now going to become kosher. Very big deal. So he goes to the factory and he had a number of stipulations that Arnold went, oh, of course they checked that it's actually kosher, so on and so forth. And he says, one more thing. We want to make a pas yisrael. So shut the ovens off and I'll turn them on. And they started laughing at him. And they said, these ovens haven't been shut off in 25 years. Right? Why? Because they're afraid it's going to break. They just keep it going, even in the weekends. So just keep the ovens on. So we're not shutting the ovens off of you. So it is true that some of the hashkachas have invented some cool stuff. The Star K has this lighting bulb, and they just put up an extra bulb in, like, you know, a Brady Cracker, one of those things, and it adds. It just has to add a little bit. And they turn it on, and that's it. I'm not mistaken, because I think he told me about this himself, The Chav Kei, Rabbi Rosenbaum, showed me that he had a Rav Yashav. He has this heating rod that they throw into ovens that increases the heat of the oven. And he thought that that also would be pasta. I'm not sure why the OU does not. It's not so much on this. And now it could be, as I've been told, some of these items are pasta shell, but they don't know. You know, it could be a day that it's not pasta shell. So that's why they don't hold from this. It happens to be here in the Eretz Yisrael. A lot of the hashkachos cannot understand how the OU exists because for them pasta shell is the only way you could be mahadran. It has to be pasta shell. It's supposed to be according to the law here in Eretz Yisrael that all items that are imported should be pasta shell. I hate to break it to them. That's not really true because I know all you items that come in here that say on a pasta shell, I don't think they really are. I don't know unless I'm mistaken and they really are pasta or whatever. There's a guy who smuggled in Entenmann's donuts who was selling it here. I mean, that was smuggled in. But I know a guy that's an import exporter. He used to, for the yeshiva, like he used to bring stuff like this, like Dr. Pepper's in. So he told me that he has a huge problem with the OU bringing stuff in. The rabbinate is not a big fan of them. And he said that the pasta shells and then and chol yisrael. We'll get to chol yisrael at the end. Is another thing that so there are heterim to this. The largest topic, and we won't have time to touch obviously on all the diktukei of it, is bishul akum. Bishul akum is a serious one because there's no heter. We'll get to the heterim, but there's no heter like pasta shell. Well, you know, come on. It's nothing like that. And here the Rama writes, Hidlik ha'akum es atanu v'yafia bo Yisrael, o shehidlik Yisrael v'yakum, o shehidlik. So any of these different things would be allowed. Either the guy started cooking, right, and you were involved in the process, and then you took the item and put it in the oven itself, or put it on top of the stovetop. Or the opposite, you turned on the fire, that would be good. According to the Rambam, though, the Svardim hold that you have to be involved mamish in the cooking process. The fact that you turned the oven on 2 days ago isn't good enough. And therefore, if a Svardi person goes to a Ashkenazic Hashkacha place, he has to verify with the Mashkiach that it's Bishul Yisrov. If it's a Mahadran Hashkacha here in Israel, you have no problem. But I'm not sure, let's say the OU, right? You go to America into a restaurant, I'm not sure what they would hold. You go into a Star K restaurant, right? He might have to say, "Well, can I be involved?" It's not good enough that he turns the fire. I once had this situation in Nebuch Lo Aleinu. I once had this situation here in Eretz Yisrael. That was a really bad story. I was in a restaurant. We have a custom. My family, we like to go Purim, Shushan Purim. We like to go to Yerushalayim, celebrate Purim. So we go to the hospital and we give out all of our leftover shalchmanos, which are a lot. Then of course the hospital always yells at us. You know, these kids are going to die from all this candy you gave them. You know, we're on the diabetes floor. You know, we're giving out. No, I'm kidding. But then something cute. They always say, oh, you have to give the Arab kids also. You know, it's Purim for them. I'm like, no, it's not. Okay, fine. Anyway, every year we always have this. There's always one nurse that comes up to us and starts screaming at us. Why don't you give the Arab kids? I don't understand. Don't you want to do a Kiddush Hashem? I'm like, I don't know if it's Kiddush Hashem, but okay, fine. So anyway, we always go out for a little suda afterwards. So we went out for a suda. We found a nice mahadran place, and my kid sat down, and I just went up to go like look around, and I see the two people that are making the food. It's very unique here in Eretz Yisrael. Somebody pointed out to me last night, right? All the food is made in front of you. Like that's considered to be, oh look, we're spitting in your food in front of your face, as opposed to in America where they do it in the back. You don't know what's going on. So what happened? So I see that they're making the food. The two Arabs. So I have two issues here. Number one, bishul akum, and number two, there's a halach called baser mestalak menayim. So I asked them. I said, "If a mashkiach, if a yudi, if a the guy that owns the place, he left for Purim Suda, and the mashkiach told us he's not coming back till tomorrow." I go, he told you that? Are you sure? He's like, "Yeah." So I said, why is it not baser mestalak menayim? Why isn't a case, again, we have a halacha, for example, you know, it's a famous story, another Baba Maisa story, where someone went on a plane. And he opened up a sandwich, and he said, oh, shoot, I forgot to wash. So he tells the guy, excuse me, I have to go wash, and he goes wash. And he's about to say hamotzi, and he realizes that he just left his corned beef sandwich open. The guy could have switched it out or whatever. So he decides he's going to be machmir, he's not going to eat it. Barsha mestalak menayim. So the guy next to him says, can I ask you a question? Why are you not eating the sandwich? He says, no. He says, do you want it? He goes, no, I don't want it. And finally he says, can I just tell you something? That sandwich looks so good. Was I took some of the corned beef out and put my meat inside. Baser mestalak menayim, that's the case of baser mestalak menayim. Okay, you know, another Baba Maisa story, but it's still a nice story. And no, it happened, and my friend, I swear to you, it happened. Fine. In any case, so in this case, the Jew would have to be involved. And in my case, I called the mashgiach, and the mashgiach said the worst thing I could ever hear. He goes, "Ein lecha rachmanut alai. You have no rachmanis. You're going to get me in trouble now." I'm like, "Why did you tell? All you had to do is not tell the guy." So they thought that I was tining about Bishul Akum. So the guy says, "Fine, you could cook the stuff. I mean, I could throw whatever I'm going to order. You could throw it on the fire." I go, "No, that's not the problem. The problem is, how do I know the meat's even kosher? There's nobody here. You could switch that out, and nobody would say anything. I'm not good enough for Barsa Mistak when I'm not a mashgiach." I had a problem there. Here you have to be involved. So we're not as machmir, right? We say just so all the doing mashgiach just turns on all the fires we have in where I'm working now. So the rabbis just go, and they know the goyim are very machmir. They're like, "Rabbi, is it okay?" So I don't know why, but the OU has a policy also. Anything, any fire that's turned on has to have. So for example, even when it comes to heating up hot water, right, which is not, we're going to see in a moment, it doesn't really need, a rabbi has to do everything. Okay, low plug, so that everybody should know. When it comes to fire, you have to do it. A sternos, so, you know, the food's cooked already. So, still, the rabbi has to light it. That's a good thing to get involved in that. So, what's the isser? So, what's the isser here? So, we're going to say the same thing about chasnos. So, that's true. It is true. The Rashi Avodah Zarah actually writes that it's not only chasnos, we're afraid the guy is going to mix non-kosher food in. How do you know? Even if it's in your house, maybe you'll put a little chalav in. Are you going to tell me it never going to happen? There's another story. This one's not a Bava Maisa, because it's a true story. A rabbi, prominent rabbi, maybe I shouldn't say his name, prominent rabbi in Queens, his housekeeper's dying. She was the housekeeper for like 40 years. And the priest is reading her last rites, whatever that means exactly, I don't know. And guess what? She says, "I want to admit something. Can you call the rabbi who I worked for by 40 years? And the rabbi comes, and she says, "Rabbi, I just want to tell you, you were very good to me, and I should have been good to you. But it bothered me that you have this kosher rules, and every single time that you ate something that I helped cook meat, I always would stick a little milk inside." For years, she was doing this. So according to Rashi, this is a possibility. Many poskim say this is not the reason for it, because obviously, in a kosher, that's why you have a mashgiach. That's not what we're not concerned with. Many, of course, give the reason, and Rashi writes this himself in Maseches Beitza in Tan Tesvav, and the Tosfos says this. Also, Rashi says this in Avodah Zarah. The Rambam holds like this in Malchus Asuras, as we just read. It's to prevent socializing. Mishum Chasnos, as the Rambam writes right over here in source number 5, right? It's going to lead to Chasnos. The Rashba writes, "What if you can come up with a kunz that can't lead to Chasnos?" There's no situation. Rashba says, no. It's still us there. There's no question about it. Oh. So what are the hetera? And these hetera are extremely important. The two hetera are nechal kamoshu chai. That you could eat the item raw. I don't know, let's give an example. Carrots. So somebody wants to cook you carrots? No problem. A guy can cook you carrots without you being involved in the process. Right? Because you could eat it raw. So the question is, what else can you eat raw? Ooh, this becomes a fun question. Let's get involved in this for a moment. What do you guys say? What can be eaten raw that is also cooked? So the number one thing that has become the hot topic of the day is?
Fish.
Right, sushi. A question?
Yeah, what about cookie dough?
Oh, cookie dough. Good question. Well, cookie dough, by the way, is not cooked. It's baked. I know it's a little bit, what's the difference between baking and cooking, right?
Liquid.
Right. Oh, very good. So yeah, so cookie dough, mistama, is considered to be baked. And therefore, we would consider that to be, but still would be pas yisrael. So the question is it a pas yisrael because you could eat cookie dough raw, and that nowadays seems to be something across the board is done. It's even put into ice creams, I'm told. My friend Ben told me. Oh no, I think it was Jerry. And this is something that's totally done. So yeah, one could argue that now is not considered to be pas yisrael because it's mechal chai. The question is, does it apply to pas yisrael as well? It's an interesting question. Fish is the big sushi question. I was surprised to hear that many hashgachas are not somich on this. Because if you ask, I asked in my office, a sushi expert, right? Because he's the guy that makes the sushi. And he said to me, "Dayo, I'll tell you something very interesting." And he said to me that when it comes to sushi, there's only special fish that are used. They're specially made. I don't understand what he was saying. Is, you know, he doesn't speak English so well. But like, say, for example, if it's the salmon, it's a certain grade of salmon. It's not all fish. And therefore, I think most of the hashgachas are not so mech that fish can be eaten raw. And this is a big mistake that people make often, where they'll tell a guy, "Oh, you know, they're in a restaurant, chas v'shalom, that's not kosher," or whatever. They're off on a trip somewhere. And they say, "Oh, yeah, you can make us fish, no problem." Stomach, that's not true. Besides the fact that I think it's a big problem, because I think they put a lot of stuff in it that could potentially be not kosher. Again, there was a time where things were much simpler. Nowadays, there's so much going on. We were talking about before when it comes to bishul. Today, even beers, there are beers that are made with non-kosher ingredients. I spoke about a few weeks ago this idea. One of our former chefs, Chaim, from your days. So Chaim owns a brewery now. He makes something called ginger, spiked ginger ale. I'm told it's delicious.
It is.
And so Chaim told me that he went on a tour in the United States of breweries, and one brewery actually put pig inside. I don't know how it's not a violation of I don't know, but he said that's what the guy does. Maybe I think under 2%. You're allowed to, whatever it is. He says, Mama's trace. Can you imagine? So that's one possibility. So this becomes a question, what is Nechal Shabuchai? So there's a Chiddush, I think, in the Pre-Chadash who says, it's what you would eat raw. So let's say you're a Chazan. And Yechazan eats all the time before he has his concert or before he has a cup of
raw egg,
right? Or Yeraki, let's say Yeraki, better example, right? And you have your raw eggs before your fight. I said, does that mean the guy can cook you scrambled eggs? The Rashba says, yes. Everybody seems to disagree with this Rash. The Pri Chadash. The Orach HaShulchan, who quotes the Pri Chadash, says, and the Darchi Moshe say this is not true. It's what the custom of most people. The Rashi in Avodah Zarah says this, and the Rashba also says it's what most people would eat. It's funny, Rabbi Soloski said that he was teaching in Stern. He was talking about this topic, and he said to a girl, for example, a great example, pasta, obviously. Nobody eats pasta raw. And all the Stern girls are like, of course we do. Like during finals week, we take raw pasta and we munch on it. And he said, wow, yeah, this is okay, but it's only for normal people. Like, what do normal people have? Okay, fine. So that's what we say. And the other heter, which is a very important heter, is over a shulcha malacha. What's shulcha malacha mean? This is a big question. It wouldn't be served at a state meal, let's say. This is highly controversial what that means. Does it mean at a state dinner? Does it mean at a Trump state dinner? A Trump, he's going to eat anything. That guy eats, what do you call it? You know, they show me eating Kentucky Fried Chicken all the time. So is that now become, is it what the president would have for breakfast, which is going to be much different? I remember in the days of Ronald Reagan, you know, they said that he loved, what do you call it? Jelly Bellies. He loved, so he used to have on his, and it was like a big, oh my God, the president of the United States has jelly beans on his table. What a chutzpah. Things have changed a lot, right? Things have changed a lot. I think it was President Kennedy who was the first person. You know, he didn't wear a hat, or and he took, and then they say something about Obama because he took off his coat at a meeting once. You know, he took off his shirt. Okay, things have changed a lot in a chanami. So that's the question. The OU, I believe, has an interesting heter that if in the area it's made, let's say the thing's being made in Thailand, and there they eat it kamol shu chai, but in America they don't. I think the OU holds that would be mutter. If there's some certain items here, I think some sort of like rice noodle products or stuff like that, where it could be pre-cooked a little bit. The other hetayim of the type of cooking that's done, the famous tuna fish. One of the reasons why here in Eretz Yisrael they don't like the tuna fish to be brought in from America, because the OU has a heter that the tuna fish is actually made where? In Thailand, on the boat, when they get the tuna, the fishes. I'm not talking about the fish. I'm not talking about the case of the dolphins they had a number of years ago where they were catching a little pieces of that. That's not what I'm talking about. But they know that it's safe tuna, for sure. Somebody told me that when his grand... They had a problem years ago. If you look, I think some companies still write dolphin free. Because they had an issue where they were catching, there was like a... And they were like bottle b'shishim almost. Yeah. You know, they didn't care. That's not the way it is. Right. Someone told me that his grandfather said that the tuna fish in Europe was known as the trefa fish. They said because it was so difficult to... I don't know. But on the boats, what do? They make it into tuna fish, and they actually can it there, and they boil it. It's Bishul Akum Shein Kamo. There's no rabbi on the boat with them. So the OU holds that it's a heter. There's a number of different heterim. One is that it's not really considered to be cooking. It's steaming, and it's canned, so it's not shulcha malacha, but not because of the raw thing, the fish. That they don't hold from. So there are different heterim. The Bar Moshe was asked, or the Deber Tzina Rav, what does it mean? So he says, at a Shabbos meal. A Shabbos meal, that's considered to be a chash of a food. Or a Suda Smitzvah, something like that. Rav Belsky says, at a wedding smorgasbord, that's Shulcha Malachim. Right? So for example, things like chickpeas, Rice Krispies, popcorn, That could be made by a guy because that wouldn't be served at a royal type of meal. This is the heter of potato chips, for example. Rav Belsky, Rabbi Willig writes about this. The OU will give hashgacha on Lay's potato chips where there's no Jew that turns on the fire necessarily. Why? Because potato chips is not something that's served at a state meal. Interesting. The Kaf HaChaim, the Chilkas Ben Yamin write that today it doesn't necessarily have to be a king. It could be the president of the United States, what he would eat. Again, the question is it, in the Masorah Journal, they have an article there where he writes about, is it what the president would eat for breakfast? Is the famous thing about the Queen of England and sardines. Do we say that sardines are over Shulchan Aruch? It's something that they wouldn't serve at a state meal, but the Queen of England has it for breakfast, let's say. How would a person hold? The star cases. No, it's only by a state dinner. What does that mean? Let's just listen to the chiluk. It's a very important chiluk. The chiluk would be a state dinner means that the following thing, very interesting. A state dinner would mean like this. Here's the interesting question. There's a big shiloh, a great shear, if you want to go on to Wadi Torah, Rabbi Selesky has, on jelly donuts. The real jelly donuts, right? Not the fake ones, like Entenmann's, that's baked. But a real jelly donut, as you guys know from being in Eretz Israel, is fried. So it's fried dough. That dough nobody eats raw. So how do you... Jelly donuts is a problem. And let's talk with guys. Dunkin' Donuts. Why is Dunkin' Donuts not a problem? Right? So you're going to tell me it's not baked. It's not pasta israel. We consider that to be bishul. So what would be the heter? So the heter would be... Well, it's not over shulchan malachim. They're not serving jelly donuts at a state meal, says Rabbi Soloski, until his friend went to a Hanukkah party. And guess what they served at the Hanukkah party? Latkes and jelly donuts. So he thought that that was a problem. Anyway, he was happy to hear that, at least in Tinek, Rabbi Teitz is machmir, that they do turn on the ovens before. A Jew does turn on the ovens. But, I don't know if you know this, the one in Tinek, they don't really make, it's like finished off there. So where they bake it, I guess, and whatever the factory is, so they're machmir on that. I don't know what they do in the one in the 5 pounds. I'm sure it must have be machmir. But it could be, I think that's what the star case is getting at, that's not considered a state dinner, because guess what? Obama and Trump, they're not eating at that dinner. They're just saying, okay, goodbye Jews, have your disgusting food, you know, shkoyach, you know, like the same thing when they have, whatever, Ethiopian Day. So the president's not sitting down with them and eating, okay, maybe they're not having any food there, but they're not eating whatever they're eating there, right? Okay, whatever. Whatever the situation is, right? Yes, they're at the state dinner. Yes, they're at the place, but they're not eating it there, right? So therefore, that could be a heter, that's not a state dinner. At a fancy schmancy dinner, they're not going to let them have jelly donuts. That's not what people have. So too the sardines and other things like that. So this is just something you have to look into when it comes to Bishul Akam. You have to be involved in the process in a chanami. Finally, when it comes to Chal Yisrael, I just wanted to point out the famous heter of Rav Moshe Feinstein, which is well codified, and here is a huge problem here in Eretz Yisrael, because we only hold from Chal Yisrael, and therefore you'll see that items that are brought in will say avnitz, a very interesting word, avakat nochri. Not because of Rav Moshe's heter, because of Rav Svi Pesach Frank. He saves us. He saves all of Eretz Yisrael. The only reason why Hershey products are allowed here is because he held that when it comes to Chol of Yisrael and it's powder, okay, I hate to break this to you, but mostly all the chocolates that you're having is not made out of fresh milk. Okay, Haagen-Dazs, apparently, uses fresh milk to make their ice cream. Therefore, when Haagen-Dazs was brought into Eretz Yisrael, they made a mistake. They didn't realize that it was made with right, and it said on the hashgacha, this is what I was told, and they took it off all the shelves. The rabbinate went crazy, and they got it off. I've seen it since then, but I don't know. They're lying to them. I unfortunately have a bad story about a guy who told me, this guy that comes in, his name is Tayari. He's one of the big distributors of importer and exporters. So Tayari told me he tries to bring products in. He said to me, Pashut, he said, tell me what are Americans like? I'll bring it in. I'll be able to sell it. I don't know. So he said one time people told him about this thing called cheese curls. They're shamatal cheese curls? I'm like, oh yeah, hers cheese. I love it. He said, I couldn't bring it in because it's not Chol of Yisrael. And apparently it's made out of real milk. It was a problem. All of a sudden out of nowhere I get a call. This guy says, Shalom Aleichem. He says, Aleichem Shalom. He says, I'm a rabbi in, I'm not going to say the place, Brooklyn. And I hear you have a problem bringing cheese curls in. I'll put my Mahajan Hashgach on and you can bring it in. He's like, but it's not Mahajan. He goes, don't worry about it. Whatever, work around with that later. He told me I was so offended, so upset. It's not Chol of Yisrael. Can you write Mahajan? I don't know. It may be so much on this heter. Rav Moshe Feinstein has the famous heter where Rav Moshe says here in Yerodea, Chelik al Simon Mem Zayin, Lechain b'chol she'asur rak b'chol of Akum, v'ein Yisrael roi she'yesh heter. What would be the heter? It seems like there's no heter. But if the government is overlooking it, and they know, so Even though we know that the American government has rules and regulations, I watched an amazing video on YouTube, a symposium a number of years ago. They wanted to reintroduce the Chol Yisrael should be. They basically were ganging up on the OU, I think. And all these famous rabbis, and there was one rabbi who got up there, this is Mamash Lashon Hara, I won't say who he is because he said something so incredibly incorrect. If I dare use the word stupid. And he tells the story about Rav Moshe Feinstein that he was at a bris once and he was drinking milk and they said to him, no, Rebbe, that milk wasn't Chol Yisrael, and he went to the garbage and started throwing up. So the moment he's telling this whole story, and then Rabbi Ganak stomps on the thing and goes, enough. And he stands up and he goes, first of all, when my kids used to go to him for a bracha, he would give them Hershey kisses. He says, let me tell you, how would they give him Hershey kisses? But they're under the OU, by the way. OU.org. No. I can accept it. No. See, he says, if he thought it was us. So number two, throwing up doesn't help at all. That's the stupid. It reminded me, because a few weeks ago we had this incident. We were doing the Yarche Kala, and some really firm rabbi from NCSY found out that we hold from Chol Yisrael according to Rav Moshe, because that's the OU standards. And he said, what? The food here is not Chol Yisrael? It was right after the fast. He said he went to the garbage and he tried to throw up. So I said, wow, that guy's an idiot also. That Rav Moshe Feinstein never did that. First of all, it doesn't make any sense. There's no halacha that says you had, let's say, Rachman al Salon, you ate machal sasuris, you didn't know. Nobody says it doesn't help you if you threw it up then. You ate it already. It doesn't matter. It's ridiculous. So Rav Moshe has this famous heter. And then furthermore, they had a guy who came, it was amazing. And you always find these like weird things. A guy that worked for the FDA, a firm guy that worked for the, crazy. And he says, here's the process. And he brings this, it's hard for me to explain it, but he brings like a piece of cardboard that has these little plastic inserts. And he said that when they go to the farm, right, you have one of these big tractor trailers that have milk. It's from like 10 different farms. They go, each of them, they write the name of the farm. They have like, it's really very professional, UPC, so whole thing. And it's got the whole symbol. And then they put in there samples of the milk. He says, and there are like 10 different tests that they do. Hormones, all these different things. And they bring them all before they will unload the milk to put it into whatever, company it is. They test them all. Because one of the first tests they do is to make sure it's milk. He says, so you can't tell me, in Gadol Mizu, that's what they do. Rabbi Gadak was like, I told you so. That's what Rav Moshe was saying. Rav Moshe had certainly correct information. It is a heter. And Rav Moshe clearly writes it's better to be. This person who wanted to reintroduce it, I understand why, because he said it's so much easier today. It used to be very hard to get Chol Yisrael. I remember when they used to ship it to Florida, it used to be like it had a 2-day shelf life. Then it was spoiled because it took a week to get there. It's much easier. In a Hanami here in Eretz Yisrael, Baruch Hashem, is very easy. But it is, in fact, a heter. This heter only applies to America, right? You got to check every country you go to. If your guy's on a business trip somewhere, you have to be careful. I think, I don't remember, you could correct me, when we went to Poland, I think there was a problem there. They said you can't have they only had special milk. I think, if I remember correctly, you can't use all the milk there. So you can't go and stomp a trip and be like, oh, Ramosha's hat there. Ramosha didn't talk about your trip to Guam. I once went on a business trip to the Cayman Islands. And I called the OU and I said, what's the status on milk? I want to have cereal in the morning. They said, oh, it's definitely also, you can't have it. So I said, okay, whatever, what are you going to do? I didn't bring any cereal. I said, I don't know what I'm going to do in the morning. And so then we got there in the morning, and then unfortunately we brought Noah's Ark food. And I didn't realize Cayman Air does not bring all your luggage on the flight. They only bring 50% of it because they don't have enough room. So unfortunately, our box that had all the thing came the next day. And when the truck pulled in, you could smell how bad the food was already. Everything was thrown out. We had no food. We were there for like 4 days. So we went to a local supermarket. And Baruch Hashem, we found out that when we went to the supermarket, everything in the supermarket was from like Florida, from America. Everything was kosher, right? The Cayman Islands doesn't make anything. And the milk was from America, so I don't know what the OU was talking about. It was totally 100%. It was very funny because we were with this. He was a black guy from the Cayman Islands, and he never met Jews before. And we were walking, oh my God, hummus! Oh my God, pizzas! And he's like, what are these people? Never saw food before? Because we were looking for hashkachas, and everything was having. And we were so excited that we had stuff. Can you imagine? You think 4 days you're not going to eat, and we found this. You guys know Morningstar, so they had a whole thing of Morningstar. And we bought a little toaster. It was really funny. We were in a hotel. We stayed in like villas. And so we were able to cook with this, whatever. Until today now, for 4 days, all I ate was Morningstar. I cannot touch anything that made Morningstar. I hate it now because I was on it. But anyway, this is a heter. Anyway, Sof Kol Sof, sorry for keeping you a little bit too long. But this is a very important idea to think of. The Hivdilanim and Atonim, these are the parshos of Shemos. We're Muvdal to show that we're different. And these are some of the things that you should keep in mind when we are on the college campus and as we move on to the business world. I think some very important review of very important halachos.